Welcome to Good People. I'm Elizabeth Gordon, and I've got Dana Barrett with me in the studio as well.
Good morning, good people.
How you doing today, Dana?
I'm going to have to just keep saying good. I'm good. It's all good. We're good people. Everybody's good.
It is. It's a good day. It's good morning. Everybody's looking forward to Good Morning Atlanta tomorrow morning.
Of course.
But today, we have got a terrific show for you. It's August 21st, and we are talking about healthcare today with our expert, Lisa Owen, who is the owner of Core Benefit Solutions. Lisa, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. I'm great.
She's going to top our good.
Not only am I just good, but I'm great.
How dare you?
Thank you for having me.
So we've been talking, obviously on this show, we interview a lot of senior HR executives and companies about their human resources policies and strategies and their people of how they get and retain and attract the top talent and the best people out there to work for their company. And a lot of attention is being paid these days to healthcare and benefits and why companies need to be really informed about what's going on in healthcare. And so, Lisa, start us off by giving us some context around the overall healthcare as an issue as it relates to companies today.
Well, just to kind of give you some background, and I know that for some people this topic isn't always exciting, but we know it's very important for
exactly.
for all of us. So just to kind of let you know, you hear about this, the terminologies associated with this law. You hear healthcare reform, you hear PPACA, you hear ACA, and all of these are acronyms that embrace the healthcare reform, which, as we know, has now passed. So a lot of people continue to ask me, well, should we just wait till the election and then see what's going to happen? And I try to explain at this point, it's moving forward, and everybody's planning on making the adjustments, and as if it is going to move forward.
The changes are mandated now, and you need to plan as if all of that is going through.
Right, because there are many of these pieces of the law that already passed are already enforced. And many of them will not be in effect until 2014. Those are when the big pieces of the law will start affecting more employers, and you hear about the pay or play mandate, which a lot of people, which we'll get into a little bit later in 2014, but many of the pieces of the law have already been enforced and are continuing to, such as some are actually, one is coming up September 23rd, and then you're going to have the new flexible spending limitations that will be enforced in 2013, which for any of those that have participated in a flexible spending plan, now the limitation will be at $2,500, that you won't be able to put aside any other money other than $2,500, whereas before there were no limits on those flexible spending plans. So some of these are already...
Does that have any impact on employers, or is that an employee thing?
Well, it does, because whenever you put money in the flexible spending plan,
right,
the employer's saving FICA dollars, FICA taxes on those that money.
So, I gotcha.
From a tax perspective, and that's the whole reason that not the whole reason, but one of the reasons is that that will limit some of the tax savings that the employer and employees will receive to bring that to the $2,500 limitation. So, it mainly affects the employees, but the employers are affected as well by that.
Were there people that were, I'm sure there were, but I know for me, whenever I've had those options, I'm always afraid that you lose it if you don't spend it thing. So I was always afraid to put too much aside because, I don't want to lose it. So I was always pretty conservative about how much I put aside. Do you think that's common, or do you think people really go crazy?
I think that the majority will put, because they don't expect their expenses to be generally, over $2,000. So I think $2,500 is reasonable. But the reality is, once people got used to the system and they realized how much money, especially those with families.
Right.
Big families.
Right, right.
$2,500 doesn't get you that far when you're talking about multiple people. But as an individual, $2,500 generally would be a conservative and reasonable amount. But as you as you...
Right. You got a decent-sized family. You can blow through that in the first couple of months.
Especially if somebody has a serious health condition, when you start talking about medications, et cetera.
Yeah, if you're doing diabetes supplies every month and you're doing, you know, the mom's doing the birth control and the dad's got the diabetes and the kids have ADD and...
Right.
Yay, America.
You got it.
Now, Lisa, since you've been involved in benefits, how would you rate what's going on in terms of healthcare reform now relative to, like, everything you've seen? Because you've been in this industry for a long time. So put it in context here, what we're seeing the changes right now.
Well, I've been, yeah, I have been in the industry for about 17 years. And when I started, I'll say that, you know, in the beginning, I was, when I came on board, we had single-digit increases. When I say single-digit, less than 10% increases. And then slowly but surely, everybody hears about the double-digit, and we're talking about average 12 to 20% on average. You know,
Per year. Costs are increasing.
Yes. And that's on a corporate basis. The individual market was even higher than that. I have seen some pros and cons to the law, and I will say that, you know, many of you may have heard about the rebates, and you might have read about it, where the medical loss ratio rebates, which this applies to the insurance carriers, where just to sum it up, technically, if they're earning more than 20% profit, they're and there's some formulas that are in that, in premium versus claims paid, the money does have to be paid back to consumers. Well, in the state of Georgia, very few companies on a corporate basis actually had to rebate money. So that does tell you that it's not as quite as profitable as maybe we were thinking, but on the individual side, there were more rebates paid by the insurance carriers. But you're going to read in the paper that on a national average, there are millions of dollars being paid out, but generally you're going to see if anybody was paid, you might receive a check of $30 to $75 on average that they had to rebate. So even though millions are paid overall, you know, when you're talking about per person, it's minimal to a certain extent. But with that being said, I do think that that gives people more security to feel that the insurance carriers can't particularly gouge them if that's what they're feeling like. And we, as we all know, or in my opinion, this is a vicious cycle. I mean, it's not just the insurance carriers, it's us as consumers.
There's a lot of challenges to the system.
Yeah,
but it's like the perfect storm of all of these things coming together.
No, wait, hang on a second. I gotta back up here, because what are the consumers doing wrong? I'm the little guy here. I'm getting screwed.
You're so getting the diabetes.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. No,
oopsie. But yeah, I mean, like, what? How? I don't get it. So help me out here.
Yeah. Well, you look very healthy. I definitely see you work out too. So you like me, I don't necessarily use my healthcare system as much as many do. But unfortunately, you do have a couple of things. I would say three things. And I think one is just education as consumers. We don't necessarily educate ourselves on the healthcare system as we do buying a new phone, buying a new computer. And part of that is access to that education. And what I mean by that is if they say you need a certain, you know, let me give you an example. Yesterday we went to we took our dog to the vet. They said, you know, I think we're going to need to do an ultrasound. And I said, so how much is that ultrasound? And what happens if we get the ultrasound? What happens if we don't get the ultrasound?
Right.
And we as consumers don't always feel comfortable asking physicians. They say we need an ultrasound, and we don't really talk about price. We don't shop price. We don't talk about what happens if, because if a doctor tells you need something, I mean, the first thing, and of course, but we as consumers don't have access to that education to understand pricing.
That's a very good point.
And to understand not just, and talk when you're, especially when you're talking about big dollars. And
you know what? I think the consumers that do ask those questions are the self-employed ones who have crappy insurance or no insurance. And that's when you learn to do it. But the people that are corporate people that have always been corporate people, they don't bother because, oh, my insurance will cover it.
Correct. There is an issue of this is already taken care of somewhere else, when obviously it all trickles down and it trickles backwards. So
right.
To the fact that that's the cost of health care. It continues. And when people start, that's the whole idea of consumerism, health savings accounts, where people are starting to understand and they – they start, you're moving more towards what's called, I don't like calling mandatory generics. They call it preferred generics, but where if there's a generic available, then you pay the difference in the brand name so that you're aware that there's a generic available. People get a little bit more aware when it hits their pockets.
Yes, very much so. All right, I'm
with
you now.
That's just one example.
No, it's good because I was kind of like, you know, when you're the consumer and you're only thinking about your own little world, you're sort of like, oh, wait a minute. But you're right. I think on the whole, we need to be asking a lot more questions. And you're right. And saying no to some of these procedures, just like you would with your dog or when you're buying a car. No, I don't need that racing stripe on the side of the car. It's not necessary. I don't need to spend the extra $700 for that purple stripe that's ugly anyway. You're right. I don't need an MRI for my toe.
Well, and like I say, especially when it's big dollars, and until you experience, you know, I've had a family member that, you know, all of a sudden one doctor's doing a PET scan or a CAT scan, and then another doctor, and I'm like, well, we just had this. Why can't the system from a technology perspective, you know, our healthcare system, they don't speak to each other.
Right.
The doctors don't speak to each other. There's no centralized location where you can access this information. So there's misuse in multiple procedures or multiple tests that you wouldn't have to do multiple times if we had a more advanced technology in our healthcare system.
So because it's such a complex system with all these different players and not everybody is doing their job as efficiently or effectively as they can, as we try and reform the healthcare system and address some of these challenges, what are the different responsibilities in terms of what does an employer need to know going forward as changes move through in working with their healthcare insurance companies?
Well, a couple of things specific to the healthcare reform law, because I know we're kind of getting off on an ideal situation, which will take a long time.
Right. So
to come to fruition.
Since that's not happening tomorrow, what do people need to do to deal with the current situation and what's rolling out?
Well, what I found that, you know, a lot of people are really concerned about the fact, I mean, bottom line is in 2014, all of us by law are going to be required to have health insurance one way or another, whether you purchase it as an individual, whether it's provided by your company, whether you go through the potential exchanges that are going to be potentially set up. And that's a whole, since they're not set up, I say potentially at this point. And the state of Georgia is leaning on the federal government to set up our exchange versus setting up through the state at this point. Now, that all could change. But, you know, some states have already applied to set up their exchanges on a state level.
On a state level. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but we are going to be required to have insurance. Most employers that I find that are currently, I mean, you have many employers right now that offer benefits that aren't mandated. They offer it for a reason. They offer it because it's part of their workforce culture to not only retain employees but recruit employees. So, and the majority of them are paying the minimum requirements that will be required anyway. So when I sit down with my clients, I immediately, there are a few clients, but let them know that as long as you're comfortable with what you're doing today, you're not going to have to worry too much about the pay or play mandate unless that changes. Now, if you're not offering health insurance at all, then yes, you're going to have to either offer health insurance to your employees and pay for it with the minimum requirements, or you are going to pay a penalty to the government that's not going to go directly back to your employees. They will go back to your employees based on their income, where they will receive a voucher to then go and purchase health insurance through an exchange that is supposed to be set up. But so for a potentially highly compensated employee may not receive a voucher. So you can't say that the pay or play mandate will provide the employer, well, that money will automatically go back to all the employees. So it really will depend on the penalty will go to the government and then funnel back to the employees and distribute it based on their income level. So that's
Yikes.
Why I say if you believe in providing benefits to your employees and you want to continue to do that, you want to avoid the penalty if at all possible, because that doesn't necessarily go back to the employees. And 100%
want to do it directly,
right?
Through finding a plan.
Are people going to find ways around that?
You know, or whether The mandate's only for employers with 50 or more employees on payroll.
Okay.
So, you know, depending on that, and they do include part-timers and full-timers in that 50. The part-timers, you know, act as a fraction of an employee.
But so then here's my – this is where I just – because I've worked for a lot of companies that do things in weird ways, small, you know, through big. Mm-hmm. But then I feel like aren't they just going to start hiring contractors and make everybody 1099 so they don't have to count them as employees? You know what I mean?
Well, and then you've got to deal with the whole independent contractor laws that, you know, are outside of healthcare reform that have been enforced for years, whether someone's truly an independent contractor by law.
Right.
So it depends on if some, but yeah, I mean, if there's some that are in, you know, in that scenario where they can truly count someone as an independent contractor, then that may be an option, but not, you know, the laws are pretty strict on what you can call an independent contractor and not call one. So they would have to be very careful of that.
Gotcha.
And
right. If you've got 100 people out working in a warehouse,
they're not independent contractors. Right. Got it.
And my disclaimer, I'm not giving legal advice on independent contractors. But yes, that to my knowledge, that's the case.
Everything you hear on this show is just our opinions, people.
Well, because, so, I mean, the costs are going to rise substantially for the employees. So you've got a lot of you've got kind of employers that, like you're saying, many of your clients, they're already providing a really good package. So nothing really changes on their end. But people that haven't been providing insurance now are going to have to figure out, how am I going to pay for this? Or how is this going to fit in with the overall business model that I've set up for what my costs are and how much, you know, revenue comes out of this business?
Well, that's why they need to be looking at it now. Here are the big two that really don't come up, and it's kind of behind the scenes. And you heard probably, but one piece of the law passed back in, I think it was 2010. And it was the non-discrimination. It was, 2010. And it was the non-discrimination piece. And it basically said you can no longer carve out a sector of your employees and offer benefits to them and not others, or a different set of benefits. Well, that law, they no longer enforced it, because all of a sudden they realize there are all these companies out there that maybe are only covering management, or you have the franchises that are only covering management because their hourly employees don't necessarily participate in the plan because they feel like they can't afford it. And then you don't meet participation. Just because the federal law is coming down and saying you've got to offer this, the insurance companies are still saying, if you want to be a part of our plan, you still have to meet participation. We're not just going to cover the 10 that want it that are potentially sick. You know, if you've got 100 employees, you've got to meet participation. So all of a sudden, these discrimination laws came down and said you can no longer carve out. And you had companies that said, well, I'm going to have to lay off employees. I mean, I can't afford to all of a sudden cover 200 people this wasn't even in the budget. You know, how are we going to afford this? I mean, you've got to give us more time. At this point, the law has not been enforced, but there's always that question mark if they will. And if so, that's going to affect a lot of companies. So that's one piece of it that, you know, the companies that are already offering benefits to the ones they're offering now, but if that non-discrimination piece comes in, it will affect a numerous amount of companies that are currently only offering it to a sector of their employees, whether it's salary versus hourly or however they carve it out.
So what are the kind of conversations that you're having with people right now about strategies for planning for benefits over the next couple of years as these changes continue to roll out and get mandated?
Well, one of the big ones is, and again, this is a kind of behind the scenes, but is we're going to move to what's called community rating in 2014, which Georgia's not now. And what that means is they're no longer going to look at medical status when they look at your overall health care premium. And so this whole idea of because you can't be declined anymore. Everybody's going to be guaranteed
issue.
Like
the pre-existing conditions that you talk about.
They're out the door.
Wow.
So in a way, I mean, and for many, that's...
Well, that's been contentious.
Right.
Access
to health care has been one of our two big issues, in my opinion, is access and cost.
Yeah.
Some people, an individual that wanted to go off and start their own company, the entrepreneur, all of a sudden, you know, if COBRA wasn't available or when COBRA ended, they might have a pre-existing condition that, you know, didn't, maybe they were diabetic, but it was controlled. Well, they may not be able to get individual health insurance. Well, that is out the door. And so I think that's a positive piece of it. But what people right. don't understand on the flip side of that, in my opinion, nothing was addressed related to cost. So, yeah, you can get it, but you're going to have to pay for it. And for some, you know, that's okay. I mean, as long as, you know, I can afford it.
Right, but that's right. a huge problem for – that's huge.
Right,
I mean,
right
for
because
a lot of people.
A lot of people were choosing, even though they could have access, were choosing not to access healthcare because of the cost.
And the penalty is I don't know if you know, is minor. If you don't receive – if you don't have healthcare, I mean, you pay a penalty. I think it's $95 the first year, and then it creeps up to about $250, I think, eventually.
As an individual?
As an
that?
Individual.
Wow. Okay.
So, and then you're going to have an annual – this is how it's supposed to work. Then you're going to have an annual open enrollment once a year that you can opt into the plan. But let's say that the annual open enrollment is January 1st. You're diagnosed something with February. You won't be able to opt back in until January the next year. So there's that risk. But anyway, going back to the community rating, what I'm telling my clients is that you need to start looking at options outside that you don't normally look at. Most of our clients are fully insured. We have self-insured clients too, but generally larger companies being 100 employees or above, the only ones that looked at self-insured. And I try to tell my clients under 100 employees that you also need to look at self-insured because the community rating won't help. It's not being enforced on the self-insured market. And community rating, states like New Jersey are under community rating now, and go up and look up an individual cost in New Jersey, and it's on average about $500 per
so
person.
So explain what community rating is, because I'm not...
Basically, we all pay... just think about a community. We're all paying into the same pot, regardless of our health status.
Right.
You might work out 5 times a week. You may be... and you may have a pre-existing condition even working out 5 times a week. That doesn't necessarily mean that you don't.
Right. But it's a whole mixed bag
right.
of the healthy and the...
But you're in general, you work out 5 times a week. This person, you know,
smokes 5 packs of cigarettes a week,
and drinks 5 Cokes a day or 5 whatever a day. But in general, we all pay into the same pot, and we're not being the rating is not based on our health status. It's based on age, gender, geographic location. You know, we pay less in the Southeast than you would pay in the Northeast, for example, based on just what physicians and hospitals charge it in those areas. So age, gender, geographic, tobacco status, and there's one more, and it's not coming to mind right now, but these are the areas that they're going to base your rates on versus your individual health status. So a lot of people think, well, great, they don't have to look at our, but the problem is there's no way to really evaluate the risk. So we're all paying into a pool, and they think that, unfortunately, because the law hasn't addressed cost, that, you know, we could see an increase in costs in healthcare due to community rating.
Well, because the average American health, people say, is not good and not getting better these days.
Yeah, and well, especially in, I mean, you look at, I mean, the in the vicious cycle, you're looking at, I mean, utilization, and it's kind of the 80-20 rule. I hate to say it. I mean, and I see it every day, all day long in my groups, but 20% of your population is using 80%, accounts for usually about 80% of the claims in that range. And that's wow. in general. And sometimes it's catastrophic, sometimes it is lifestyle, you know, and they say lifestyle makes up about 70% of the claim dollars that you spend is your personal lifestyle choices.
So, Lisa, what is something that most people don't know right now about what's going on in healthcare reform that they really need to be aware of or be aware that it's coming down the pike in
one,
the next 6 months or 12 months or so?
One, I think, is that community rating piece, because I think that people need to just start thinking a little differently and be open to looking at different ideas than maybe they have before and being educated. You know, a lot of times, like I said, the community rating won't affect self-funding groups. I mean, you're having insurance companies offering self-funding products down to about 15 employees now. I mean, that's how much they think this is going to affect that market, which is a big change. So, and I said 15, not 50. So I think that's a big piece, is that people just need to be open to kind of listening to different ideas. And, you know, if you do have a carve out right now, I think you need to all start thinking about how you would afford, not when I say carve out, if you're only offering a sector of your employees, or if you're doing something different for a certain group of employees than you are, maybe you have an executive plan, need to start thinking about, because that law, literally, they could say, we're enforcing it in 60 days. You need to comply with this new law, because it's already part of the law. It's just they haven't enforced it yet. So I just think that they need to start thinking about alternatives as we move forward, and need to talk to their brokers, which would, you know, be...
Right. It's such a complex issue. It's certainly something you can't try and navigate on your own. So what kind of advisors can people reach out to? I know Core Benefit provides a lot of services around helping people understand what the implications are around this. What would you recommend?
Yeah, I am definitely talking to their broker. They should hopefully be able to help navigate them. There are many, every time I talk to an employer, and I love it when I get questions I don't know, because it just helps me learn more. And we lean a lot on our ERISA attorneys. We have two that we use and that are very reliable resources, and also their CPA. I mean, there's a lot of tax implications related to the healthcare reform piece. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. It's a 2,700-page law that I haven't talked about, like the W-2 reporting that now is in effect in 2012. So they're going to have to start putting on your W-2s what you pay, what they pay as an employer towards your healthcare costs. That will not be taxed as of today, but the thought process is that they're getting prepared for that down the road. I mean, I hope not, but maybe the portion that the employer pays, not what you pay. So we'll see about that. But as of now, that reporting's there. So there's pieces to it, and there's 1099 now reportings that are now part of the law that you need to make sure that your CPA understands. It's not just healthcare related. And anybody that knows how legislation works, they're all, you know, they often use these laws to kind of bring in other pieces they might want to add to it. So some of that did get added.
It's a lot. I'm like so glad that I don't do this.
I know. I know.
Basis. I'm overwhelmed, Dana.
I'm kind of in awe of your brain.
I know. Well,
exactly.
Because you have to not only sort of keep up with everything, but then also sort of keep up with it, retain it, and then apply it to each of your individual customers' needs, because everybody's going to be a little bit different in terms of the types of employees they have, the size of their business, you know, what they can afford. I mean, so then you're sort of applying all these new laws and looking forward 2 years. And I mean, that's a lot. So
well,
good for you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I will say, a lot of people say, you know, because the broker role will be changing, you know, as this moves forward. And to me, I think where there's change, there's opportunity. And I look at this as an opportunity and to educate our clients. And, you know, but our role will be changing, and we'll have to adapt to that for the ones that want to and can. So I look forward to it. I look at it as a challenge.
So let's make sure people know how to get in touch with you and find out more about Core Benefits Georgia and get some good advice on this conundrum that we're sitting in these days.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we have, like I said, we've got quite a few. We have a healthcare reform specialist as well as me, so that does a lot of the research. So feel free, and I think we mentioned it maybe in the beginning, I'm not sure, but we are a brokerage firm that works with employers anywhere from 2 employees to 1,000 employees in that range, and we also work with individuals. But if you need any of our services, we work with all the major carriers in the healthcare area, but you can reach us at www.corebenefitsga.com, and that's corebenefitsga.com, and it's Lisa Owen, and it's Core Benefit Solutions. You can always Google it as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming into the studio today, Lisa, share all of this great information with us.
Educate us. We need it.
Thank you for having me.
It was our pleasure. This is Elizabeth Gordon.
And Dana Barrett.
And you've been listening to Good People on BusinessRadioX.com. We will talk to you next week.